Law Focus Podcast. Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Good evening to all of you, our listeners, and welcome to Law Focus on BioFM 88.1. Thank you for tuning into our show. My name is Thabo Mahape, and I'm your host for tonight. Now, as the country slowly embraces level one restrictions from the coronavirus, you should really keep in mind that the pandemic is still very much among us. It hasn't disappeared. It hasn't moved to level one. And we've seen many people on social media sort of living their quote-unquote best lives as if we're free from the virus. But let's remember that the virus hasn't gone away. And let's keep wearing our masks and sanitizing our hands to protect ourselves from being infected with COVID-19 as well as the people around us. Now, we appreciate that you're always entrusting us with your Tuesday nights, and you trust that we will give you content that's relevant and valuable to your lives. Just as a reminder, Law Focus is all about dealing with issues that relate to legal matters. And tonight's show, we tackle, once again, the very difficult topic of gender-based violence. It's from a slightly different perspective today because we're going to be talking to legal aid. But this scourge of gender-based violence and how we can fight it as a country as it's constantly hanging over us is the topic of today. Now, we're always here to inform you about your legal rights as well as explore the various topics that are related to the law. And tonight, what we're really aiming to do is to give you much-needed information from the Legal Aid South Africa. They want to inform us about their different plans that they have of providing services to people who have been victims of gender-based violence. And that's really important because we take it for granted sometimes that people know what to do and where to go once they are the victims of gender-based violence. And they don't always know where to go. They don't always know what to do or what resources are available to them. And that's why we've taken the opportunity to reach out to Legal Aid South Africa and let them explain to us what people can do once they are the victims of gender-based violence and where they can go. But remember that we love engaging with you, and you can engage with us on our social media platforms. Now, the various places where we're available are Twitter at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus. On Facebook, we are VowFM. And for podcasts, you can visit vits.journalism.co.za/law or the Vits Radio Canopy page on Iona. We're also available on Spotify now. Now, let's get started with the first feature of our show, very interesting and often quite lively, Legal Hotspots. Take a look at the hottest legal stories of the week.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspots.
The Western Cape High Court has dismissed the public protector's application. The Western Cape High Court has dismissed the first part of the public protector, Busi Mkhwebane's bid against the parliament's processes to implement rules that could see her impeached. It was dismissed with costs last week. Now, that isn't personal costs that people love to go on about when talking about the public protector, just costs. That's normal in litigation. According to the citizen, her application to stop parliament from investigating her fitness to hold office was dismissed. And the court ordered Mkhwebane to pay costs to the first and tenth respondents. Justice Vincent Saldana, on behalf of the full bench, ruled that Mkhwebane had failed to make a case for why the National Assembly should be interdicted from implementing the 17-step process that Parliament had developed to impeach Chapter 9 institution heads. If you remember last year, or I think it was the year before, it became apparent that we didn't have any processes in place to impeach Chapter 9 institutions. So this legislation is actually quite new. And this is probably the first time that it's being tested in court. So it's quite an important process. What the justice has ruled is that Mkhwebane's claims that the rules are being used to target her specifically were not reasonable. Saldana ordered Mkhwebane to pay costs to the first and tenth respondent, who are the National Assembly Speaker Thandi Modise and the DA respectively. Mkhwebane's application is part of a two-part application against the bid to have her removed. And the court found that she could not successfully bring her arguments in the first part until she had successfully challenged the constitutionality of the rules that governed the proposed process. So obviously that is going to be an ongoing process. Only one portion of it has been dismissed. And it's with certain provisos as well. We'll watch that closely, I think, because it could have dire consequences for the people involved. Or not dire, serious consequences. Now, the former president, Jacob Zuma, is subpoenaed to appear at the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture. The chairperson of the Commission of Crime and Interstate Capture, the Deputy Chief Justice of the Republic, Justice Raymond Zondo, has ruled that the Commission is set to sign and issue a subpoena against former President Jacob Zuma. He is to appear before the Commission at 10 a.m. on 16 November. Now, the Citizen reports that failure for Zuma to comply with Zondo's directive without sufficient cause is a criminal offense. Last month, Zondo didn't mince his words when he said he wouldn't negotiate with Zuma's legal team on the date that the former president should testify at the commission. Now, Zuma has failed to appear before the commission before. According to letters from his lawyers, he was preparing for his arms deal court matter. Now, that matter prompted Zondo to determine that Zuma would have to appear before the commission from 16 to 20 November. No less than 34 witnesses have implicated Zuma in wrongdoing, and so he's required to go and deal with those allegations. The Deputy Chief Justice noted that the former president's lawyers have already submitted an affidavit to oppose the application. Zondo recommended that Zuma could testify via video link or audio link, which has been approved as a suitable means to allow him to give evidence. The ongoing saga of Justice Zuma and the courts and the commissions and something, really, it's been, it's been how many years, almost 20 years now of this. Let's see how this one goes. Anything is possible in doing this, in this thing. Moving on, though. South African fugitive Gerard Jansen van Vieren is back from Brazil to face murder charges almost 11 years later. The Citizen has reported after evading trial for the alleged murder of his girlfriend 9 years ago, the wheels of justice have finally caught up with a South African man who is based in Brazil. The now 39-year-old Gerard Jansen van Vieren was due to face trial in 2013 after he allegedly stabbed his ex-girlfriend, Andrea Venter, who at the time was 25 years old. He stabbed her to death in December 2011. The incident happened just outside the Venter's residential complex in Joburg. Now, Jansen van Vieren attempted to commit suicide at the scene of the crime, but he was arrested and charged with murder. And then he appeared in the Randburg Magistrates Court. He was granted bail by the High Court, despite police twice opposing his release. 4 days before his trial was due to start in May 2013, he fled the country using false documents. A warrant was issued by Interpol in Pretoria, followed by a process to track him down. He was again arrested in 2015 after serving he was apprehended by authorities in Brazil in 2013 for the charge of false documentation, but he was then released in 2015 after serving a short sentence for that crime. Undeterred for the years, Interpol and Pretoria remained in contact with Brazilian authorities in an effort to locate Jansen van Vieren. Eventually, he was arrested in June of this year through the two teams' investigative collaborative efforts. And they were able to identify his address in Brazil. And one wonders why he wasn't simply retained after he served his first sentence, but, you know, sometimes these things happen. Van Vieren has been kept in police custody in Rio de Janeiro since his arrest, and he will arrive back in the Republic last week to face crimes he recently committed a little less than a decade ago in South Africa. Hopefully justice will be served. 10 years is a very long time to wait to hear on the fate of a loved one. I mean, the family of his girlfriend must be reeling, but luckily he's back in the country. Hopefully no bail this time, my word. The cops back in the dock as Marikana murder trial resumes.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspots. Law Focus, handing you your rights.
Welcome back to Law Focus on Via FM 88.1. And if you just joined us tonight, we're once again tackling the pandemic that is affecting the women and children across our country. It's a serious one, and it comes up so often, not because we don't have other things to talk about, but because it's so important. I know last month we really went through the issues of gender-based violence, and we were in conversation with one of the survivors of gender-based violence, and she was also the founder of a very wonderful organization that fights femicide and domestic violence. And we spoke to a legal practitioner who also discussed with us about the various channels that GBV victims can acquire legal assistance through. Now, tonight we're going to talk with Stephen from the Legal Aid Board. And the reason we're talking to someone from the Legal Aid is because they've embarked on their national strategic plan on gender-based violence. Now, for those of you perhaps who don't know what Legal Aid is about, Legal Aid is a quote-unquote the biggest law firm in the country. And that's because it's mandated by the South African Constitution to help poor people access justice. They're funded mainly by the taxpayer, and their job is to ensure that justice is accessible to as many people as possible. And the type of cases that they help with the range very much from criminal cases to civil matters as well. And they also offer legal services to anybody who lives in South Africa, and that can include at times foreign nationals. So it really is a big, big part of our justice system. And so when they make a move, I think, you know, it's very important for all of us to listen. Now, Legal Aid has joined the rest of the country in fighting the scourge of gender-based violence. And they're implementing a plan where they aim to offer safety, justice, and protection to gender-based violence victims. Now, their primary role is to make legal services available with regards to divorce, domestic violence interdicts, maintenance, both for children, pendente lite maintenance, care and contact of children, and other legal services which all fall within their mandate. And also makes justice available to women who are perhaps not equipped to be able to protect themselves. Now, tonight we're speaking with Stephen Mofokeng. He's from Legal Aid, and he's going to be telling us about more of their campaign to fight gender-based violence. Hello, sir, and welcome to Law Focus. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tsepo. Thank you to invite you and to be your guest. And I also like to greet your viewers and yourself. Let me just correct one thing about it's a Legal Aid South Africa. We were used to call it Legal Aid Board long time ago. We have changed our strategy and changed the Legal Aid, the one we are describing now, with our name. It has been called Legal Aid South Africa. We also have a legislation which has been enacted 2014. So we have been called Legal Aid South Africa now.
Right. Okay. Legal Aid South Africa. Now, before we go anywhere, let's break down the term GBV. How would we define it more precisely? What is GBV precisely?
GBV is an acronym. It's a gender-based violence. To describe it, it's a gender-based violence. But in South Africa, particularly, even in terms of the UN, it's where you find that there's a violence against women and children. Most of the time, you find that they are the male counterparts in the country. In that violence, it also includes the femicide, where you find that our children and our women in the country, they are being murdered, they're being raped, all these sorts of violence which has been done against them. So as a result of that, this term GBV then started to get that meaning. Mm. But in South Africa, it's a serious concern. As you've done your intro, this is a very serious pandemic which is facing our country. So it's a national problem.
Mm. And from the work that you do, how would you describe the seriousness of the matter? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Or are we just hearing about it more?
It's getting bad. It's getting worse. It's getting worse in the country, because I can attest to that from the statistic, from what the number of cases that we're getting at the local level. And we can see from media that what is happening out there. I think it was not so long, 3 months, we had a very serious case of Tsogofatso, which was a very serious case where a female person, he was in a Dobsonville, she was murdered while she was pregnant and she was hanged. Mm-hmm. So it's bad, because now it's not only now issue of violence, it's now becoming involving femicide, and it's not only ordinary murder, it's a brutal murder which has been, and it, including children, our children, where you'll find that in, I saw also in one of our sister justice center in Limpopo, and also in Feriana thing also, there you found that some of the children, two children, they were met at, and at some places in KZN, you found that children have been met at, and also the rape of minor children by some of the people who are in the society. They are very eminent person, people that you cannot even suspect that this person can commit such atrocities against minor children.
That's true.
Yeah, it's so serious that even in court, those cases, they are coming, and they are coming thick and fast. So as a result, at some stage, they are causing the backlog in our court roll.
Yeah, so this is a really big problem. I like what you said there, that it's people who are among us. They live and work and, you know, have a good time among us. You know, it's not some guy who has horns and he has a tail somewhere. You know, some people like you and me. Now, what has made Legal Aid choose now to go on this 100 days of no violence against GBV?
You know, after this issue of GBV, we were invited as a Legal Aid when there were one of the court was open. It was a poisons court here in Gauteng, where our president, together with some member of cabinet, they've came. When they opened the case, and then the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, I think it was 2018, is going to take serious this form of gender-based violence, because now it's eating our society, our children and our female, they are no longer safe. And there were many NGOs which were there, non-government organizations, civil societies which were there, and he gave them undertaking that after that opening of the court, and when he gave the speech, I know that I remember he was with Minister Naledi Pandor, and also he was with Minister Batabile Dlamini, and Minister of Justice at that time, Mr. Masodi. So he gave undertaking that he will formulate all government departments which are involved, which are in the justice cluster, to come and form a national steering committee. And in that steering committee, to develop a strategic plan for gender-based violence. And with his undertaking, we found that it is Department of Justice and NPA and other non-government organizations, NGO and civil society. And Legal Aid was a part of that committee. And within that committee, Legal Aid was a participant, and we came with the campaign, which is 100 Days Campaign, where we'll find out that we'll have to educate the society, we'll have to conscientize the society, and also to tell them which government department or which places, if they are victims or if there's another person who's victim that you know, a family member, where you can go and get help and service. So we are one of the participants, and we've taken that the initiative that all participants in that committee, they must take initiative to make this awareness, to go to public as the radio station, TV, social media, to make the country aware that there are avenues and other places where they can get help. So that's how we are taking this initiative, and that's why we are active in this campaign.
I suppose it's true that many of us, particularly in the big metros, we take it for granted that someone will know where to go if they are the victim of gender-based. We take it for granted almost, but actually what you're saying is true. Many people don't know where they can go to get assistance. You know, they want to go maybe to their uncles or their aunts, which is okay, but they don't always know that actually you can take this to this particular court, or you can ask this organization to help you.
Yes, correct, because remember, people can go to SAPS, the police, which is the first stop. People, if they are unable, when they have a legal aid offices nearby, they can go to legal aid offices. They will help them there. And the other point, it is also they can go to the nearest social work, social development, where there are social workers, where they will be able to tell the police. And the other area, again, is our court, where there's a magistrate court. There is a division there, which is called, it's a family court. There will be a division of domestic violence. In that area of domestic violence, you will be able to be assisted there. So most of people, they will find that they don't understand that if there's a this thing which is being committed, where to go. And the third part of it, of gender-based violence, it's sometimes committed by the uncle, the father, the brother, the wife. And at some time, the victim doesn't know where to go.
Yeah.
And will, at the end of the day, want to take advice from another family member, sometimes to protect your brother or your sister or whoever. Mm-hmm. You will end up being misled. So there are those places that they can go to and get help. They know that they should do their part there because we are taking it seriously. And one thing that you have already said, the president has identified it also as a, it is like pandemic. It's so serious that all government departments, they must take it serious.
Yeah, just to repeat what Stephen has said there, virtually every magistrate's court in the country can sit as a family court. So if you have a magistrate's court nearby, go there and find yourself some help. If you can get there, go there. Now, if you've just joined us, we're in conversation with Stephen Mofoke. He is from Legal Aid, and we're discussing the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence that they've recently embarked on. It's a plan that seeks to educate and sensitize people to what is going on in this country and to provide a few answers for us. Now, can you break down for us what exactly the National Strategic Plan is so far? What are you aiming to achieve?
You know, in this National Strategic Plan, it's a committee which involves Department of Justice, NPA, Legal Aid South Africa, civil society, NGO. What we are aiming to achieve with this strategic plan, we are aiming to coordinate all the departments which are relevant, which I've alluded to above before, like magistrate courts, the SAPS, Legal Aid South Africa, social development and all, so that we make the people aware and to coordinate all those departments and to participate and come with a strategy as to how are we going to deal with this thing and to synchronize them as a one stop where you find that if you stop at this place, you know that you will get this type of services and they know where they will refer to. And again, also to identify the bottlenecks, where there are blockages in the system, how can we deal with this faster, efficiently, and also to be sensitive to the victims of crime, those people who have been affected by the violent crime of assault, rape, or the family of the victim. So that's what we wanted to do, and what that is our strategy, and those departments, all of them, where I want to achieve all those things which I've talked about.
Just before we move on, there are a lot of departments which are going to be involved in this program. Have you also included the Department of Health? Because very often they are the people who document the, you know, the actual incident. They document the injuries, the document. Are they included in this as well?
Yes, Department of Health is involved, particularly on those issue of documentation, the injuries, reporting back, and when collecting our stats. And also Department of Health is also involved in getting some kit which we are using, especially the laboratory also, assisting also the SAPS laboratory. Because remember, at one stage, our SAPS, they have a backlog. Mm-hmm. And also at the end of the day, they can take other departments which can assist. And you find that, especially in the case of minor children, rape of an adult, we need some evidence, which is forensic evidence. Mm-hmm. So that's where we'll find that some of the forensic evidence, we will need the doctors, we will need the sisters from there, they will receive the patient, they will assess the patient, they will make a report. After giving out the report, when the matter, after a successful investigation and the matter is due for prosecution, then we'll need the evidence of somebody who assessed the victim. In this case, we find that most of the time is the doctors or forensic sisters, forensic nurses, who have done the course, who normally, because previously we used to say in court that we were accepting the evidence of the doctors only.
Only, yes.
But I see currently now there are those sisters who have done a certain course in forensic who qualify, their qualification allows them to come to court and give evidence to that effect in the cases of sexual offences and rape and indecent, all those where the child or an adult, there was a sexual crime.
Right. No, it sounds like it's a very well-intentioned plan, and let's see, let's hope it's going to be executed very well, because it could make a big difference to people's lives. So in the implementation, sometimes there can be hiccups and so on, because we have a 100-day campaign, which is, it's a long period of time. It's just over 3 months that we're going to be on this campaign. Does Legal Aid intend this to be a once-off campaign, or is it something that we're going to see happening regularly, or maybe a shorter period? You know, is it something that's just going to happen once and then we leave it, or how's it going to work?
You know, for now, when the committee meet, the national, the steering committee, it was decided that this 100 days, it will be a program and a campaign that is going to be evaluated every time. And then after 100 days, within and during the interval of the month, there will be some evaluation and see as to whether do we still need to proceed with this campaign as it is, or do we still need to make some changes on it. For now, I can say it is still subject to the evaluation after this 100 days campaign. You see, issue of violence and the gender-based violence, and an issue which involves many departments. I think 100 days, in most cases, it's a very shorter period. Because even in court, to finalize a case, it's not that easy to finalize a case within 100 days. Remember, where there's a other department, forensic evidence and other things, there's a time that is required to do all those things. But also to take the message out there to the public. Remember, South Africa, we are more than 58 million, and our literacy level differ, and we have 11 languages. So we need to take out there to the public. So I can see now it's not something that we can just achieve within 100 days. We will need to come back to it. But as we've agreed, that we'll evaluate it and see after 100 days how much did we achieve in terms of this campaign. Because it's a very broader campaign. It involves many things. It's also a very ambitious campaign.
It is. Now, I hear you when you talk about the different departments, because they're very important, whether it's education, you know, or it is the health department or the justice department. But I think we must also be honest and say the problem is 50% of the population is a problem, because it's 50% of the population mainly who are victimizing 50% of the population. So men are actually really are the problem for the most part, you know. You do have incidents where you have some gender-based violence and the men are victims. Yes, that does happen. But for the most part, it's men. Will the campaign also tackle the issue of men, perhaps, and how we view ourselves in South Africa? To say, but guys, is this what we are?
Yes, that thing, it was touched that there must be some initiative. Look, I will accept from onset, previously, the campaign, it was focusing mostly on the female. Take a girl child to this, try to educate a girl child. But there are initiatives which are coming now that we must now start to concentrate on a boy child. And also because as early as possible, we start to establish a culture of respect to each other, a culture of equality between genders, whether a male or female, a gay, a lesbian, where people they will accept each other and accepting the background, and also starting to understand and that because we are a diverse society with different background, different cultures. Remember, where is also the issue of South Africa? We are peri-urban and very rural, and cultures still dominate. And that a man from a rural area and a man from a Gauteng, depending on the culture of different people. That's where we still need to tackle it. It was discussed on that level, and we must start to initiate. There was an issue of a men's conference at one stage where it was on social media as a joke. But now that the Gauteng province, our premier and Ekurhuleni, last year they started to try to do this thing as practical as real. And those initiatives, most of the department and this, we want to drive that thing, that we want to ask for a man to come into the picture and also to help in this. And where there's a problem to acknowledge, where there's another man to condemn all these things. But we need a lot of education to understand each other. And there's a thin line between an offense and a culture. You see, some people, they do things in the name of culture, that in terms of our tradition and custom, this is how we do things. Whereas if you look it deeper legally, you find that those people, they are transgressing the law. Because now, like issue of ukutwala custom, Constitutional Court has to come in and try to clarify to the society that actually the custom, it's one of the custom, if you don't do it properly, you are committing abduction, you are committing rape, you are committing sexual offenses. Yes, it is a culture. Yes, we know it. Some people, they were brought up against, but now we are living in a democratic space. We are living in a democratic country, which is constitution is supreme. And a constitution, it's talk about equality. Whether you are male, you are a female, you have a different sexual orientation, but the equality is there. We are equal before the law. So when you do everything culturally, you must also take into consideration and a cognizance that this person has a constitutional right, which he will have to exercise freely in an open and democratic society.
On this show, we spent a lot of time last month. Last month on that topic. And yes, there's a fine line often between our cultures and the law, you know. But also, having said that, some people do things in the name of culture which aren't really that cultural. They abuse culture to get their own ways sometimes. But I think one of the big things that we have in South Africa is that I think we should acknowledge that toxic masculinity, sexism, all of these problems that we have, you're not born with them, you learn them. You know, they're taught to you through the place where you live. And so they can be untaught as well over time. You know, you don't have to stick with whatever it was that you grew up with and accept that to be the way things should be in the future simply because they were that way in the past. Well, if you've just joined us, we're in conversation with Stephen Fokeng of Legal Aid South Africa. It's no longer the Legal Aid Board, Legal Aid South Africa. And we're discussing the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence that they've recently embarked on. It's a fascinating conversation touching on quite a few aspects of our law and our society. We'll be back soon.
Law Focus on Bafang 88.1, Point of Information.
Welcome back to Law Focus. And if you've just joined us, we're in conversation with Stephen Fokeng, and he's from Legal Aid. We're discussing the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence, and that's what they are now going to embark on, and it's quite a big effort. It involves many different departments. It seems as though it's an extremely well-intentioned and well-thought-out idea involving educating people and giving them access to resources. So what are the real challenges that you've come up with when handling gender-based violence issues?
You know, in my experience, there are a lot of challenges. One, it's an issue of the way it is being handled. There was this steering committee. It was fragmented in such a way that this department is doing the other thing, the other department is doing the other thing. So the department, they don't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. I'll make an example. We found out that the SAPS, they are implementing, doing it in a particular way. When you arrive to court, there's another way. Legal aid is handling it in this way. Social services is handling it in this way. You see, so it was very fragmented. That is why, hence now, there are challenges which have been identified, but the way we identify them, we came with what are going to be the solution. One of the challenges that I might also said about it was also of when opening the cases at the police station, there were some of the challenges, but I see that now, SAPS, now there are some individuals who have already been trained, and most of the police officers, they've been sensitized as to how to deal with them. And the other challenge is the issue of you deal with this victim like any other victim of robbery or a victim of assault or a victim of malicious damage to property, unaware that this victim, there are a particular species of victims which need a specialized skills to deal with them. And has now introduced that the victim and then the victim support program, which has to involve, started at when they open a case. That's why you find that at the certain SAPS police station, there are also social workers involved. And then in court, again, there's a victim support program. And NPA, there's also, they've already introduced also victim support program. It was one of the things which makes many people who have been affected by gender-based violence, they don't want to come forward because of the treatment that they are going to receive. And also the training also with Department of Health, it is also have to take. Also some of the people, those things, it's put shame on them. So they want, when you talk to them, you become very sensitive to them. And also it also involves some certain diseases where you find that some people, you test them and then you find that they are infected with HIV and all those sort of things. So all those programs have been taken into cognizance. There were the challenges. And also there were also the challenges of the type of courts. When the victim appear as a witness, you'll find that they will have to face the perpetrators in court because we don't have enough sexual offences court. But I can see now our Minister of Justice, together with the President, which the undertaking has made, that they are rolling out some sexual offences court to come. Yes, they need budget. It's a lot of money because a sexual offences court is a specialised court. It's very expensive. The equipment which are used there, they are also very expensive. There are CCTV. There is a certain communication way where the victim, if he feels uncomfortable, you can apply in terms of Criminal Procedure Act for a victim to give evidence remotely, maybe in a certain room where he will get the support. And there were also the challenges of forensic evidence, where you find that most of the cases are end up being struck off or removed from the road for further investigation, or others are withdrawn because we find that DNA kits, test kits, and also for minor children, pediatric test kits, for where there are rape cases. You'll find that the SAPS, at one stage, there were some, I think it was on radio, TV, all over media, that they didn't identify those kids. So those are the challenges which have been identified by this committee, that those are serious challenges. And at the end of the day, the victims, if justice is not done for him, tomorrow he'll be on the street and meeting perpetrator, walking in the street. And that on its own, even if without perpetrator doing anything, by mere fact seeing this person after 2 years, it's victim, double victimization again.
It's a very difficult reality, I think, because if the cases are not dealt with, like you say, on the one hand, the victim does feel let down, abandoned, disappointed in the system, and it discourages other people from, and people will then call her a liar, and it discourages other people from reporting. But on the other hand, what it does is it makes the perpetrator feel as though they can act with impunity. And someone who's watching that says, but if this guy can do what he did and there was no consequences, why can't I do that at my house?
That's serious. And then there's another challenge that you find at court level. It's an issue of a challenge of where it's a gender-based violence within the family structure. You'll find a serious problem when this matter started. There's a statement, everything is there. But after the investigation and the process as well, you'll find that one of the relative, and within the relative, when you go to the docket, there's a withdrawal statement. We know that in terms of the directive from the National Director of Public Prosecution, those cases, you can't withdraw them in court. You must ask for permission from National Director. Most of the time, she refused to withdraw them. Now, there's a withdrawal statement. Now, you'll find that the challenge is now, the person who make a statement, when he comes, the family already, they have talked to him that you must go there and say 1, 2, 3, this matter. Remember, forgetting that the very same victim, she's also a family member, maybe a cousin, uncle relationship, grandfather to grandchild relationship. And that becomes difficult now. And now you will find that now in court, the case is becoming more difficult. The NPA at the end of the day has to make application to declare a witness a hostile witness, and which is not a good thing for state, that they must make an application to the court that I need to declare the witness a hostile witness, starting to cross-examine his witness. Because at the end of the day, when the presiding officer evaluate the evidence, the weight of evidence is going to attach to that. It is going to be difficult to come with a conviction. So there are those elderly people in the family who still feel that we can discuss in the house as a family. We can just deal with it and leave it as it is, forgetting that what it is doing to the a victim, it's a devastating to her if she feels that, but my uncle did this to me and there was nothing happened. Actually, the case was withdrawn. When you see a daughter being somebody who drink alcohol a lot to deal with the stress, or somebody who goes during the night, then you say, I don't understand, why does she behave in this particular way? But you find that she has a very deep-seated anger and unresolved issue in herself, which needs psychological, and you understand.
It's an extremely damaging, vicious circle. Now, I know from legal aid, you're part of the judiciary, you know, part of our court system, etc. I just want to perhaps move to another important part of our court system quickly, which is our magistrates. Now, most of our listeners will understand that very many of our cases are dealt with by the district and regional courts. Fewer are dealt with by the high courts. What is the buy-in from regional and district magistrates in this 100 days and this national strategic plan? Are you getting some positive responses? Are you getting input and feedback from them about what they expect to see? Are they also eager?
Yes, definitely. We are seeing a lot of it. You know, from the part of the magistrates, they are cooperating with us. And I know from this year only, already they have identified some courts to be a sexual offences court, which they've already put some everything, equipment to deal with gender-based violence, to deal with rape, sexual offences, rape, and also where the victim is afraid. He has all been assaulted a lot. They are there. And again, the judiciary also, they understand that. And when there's those type of cases, they take a little bit more to interrogate where there are some problems or what they intervene. And there is no this thing of, you know, previously it was easy to say that no evidence has been done, investigation is insufficient, what? And it was easy to say the matter removed from the road, struck from the road. They are giving prosecution more time to get this house in order. And also there are campaigns also. And also there are waiting areas which have been identified by the NPA for their witnesses also, where they can go to wait there, this type of victim. And during the evidence, they can go there. And when they interview them, and also consult with those witnesses, most of the time they send their prosecution for training, and specialized prosecutors, they are dealing with those cases in most of them. They buy in its lot. I think most of the partners, they are working. And when coming to domestic violence court and domestic court, where they are dealing with protection order and everything, they are also assisting them. And they are the clerks which are there, which have, if they don't have an attorney or they have a challenge with to interpret certain forms, because there are forms which have already been prepared. They can help the victim to complete those forms and take them to the magistrate, and magistrate can give them the interdict, which has a return date as to giving the opportunity to the perpetrator to give reasons as to why this protection order interdict cannot be made final.
If you've just joined us, we're in conversation with Stephen Fouquet, from Legal Aid, and we're discussing the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence. It's a plan that Legal Aid has embarked on, and it's a serious one where they are spreading the word about gender-based violence, but not just about gender-based violence and the effect that it has, but what you can do about it from a legal point of view. So where you can find assistance, how to get about getting that assistance, and what the consequences can be once you do get that assistance. Something like a protection order, a criminal prosecution. We touched on those things. Keep listening, and I think we're going to get a little bit more. Now, do you think that it's really important for us, not only as legal professionals or people interested in the legal profession, but even outside of that, to continue discussing gender-based violence?
It's very important to help, because remember, our victim, they are the most vulnerable part of our society, which are minor children. Two, they are women, which they are most vulnerable. Most of them, they are unemployed, and most of them, they will find that at the rural area, they are not literate. So those type of people, they need a lot of help, and they need to be informed, and they need to be told, and even to show them as to how to deal with this type of them. And what makes also to be more important, it also includes, it is this type of violence, it's also involved femicide, where the life of people dies. And remember, in terms of our constitution, the interest of our minor children are paramount. So when we deal with all the department, they must try to raise the bar when they deal with our children, because the future of the society, it's in our children. And what is most important, we must come with a value system that will show to our children that there's a difference between abusive and action and also culture, where the children, they can be responsible, respect each other, and accept diversity. And the most important thing, which I did not highlight, which I want to put also, to show this thing is so important, there are bills which are also before Parliament, and there are legislations like amendment to our Domestic Violence Act, which is need to include also sexual harassment in order to give it a broader perspective. Our Sexual Offences Act also, which also to try to identify the perpetrators of this. Remember, there's a register of people where if they are found guilty of this rape or gender-based violence or what, the magistrate, you must inform the magistrate that they must put their name in the national register. But that national register was not open to the public. So the Minister of Justice and Justice Cluster, they've made some amendment, and the bill to put the bill to President that the public to have access. If I have a crutch, or if I have a school, or if I want a person to work for me as a domestic worker or what, or a garden boy, or somebody who's going to do a garden, you can check the national register and see whether this person is a person and not having a problem. And also there are also in terms of bail, because remember, the magistrate court is a creature of a statute, so they cannot do anything outside the legislation. So the legislation needs to be changed from time to time so that they can empower the magistrate. So they are amending our bail act. So when they apply for bail, these people which are facing cases which are involved gender-based violence, it will be difficult for them to get a bail. Remember, in terms of our bail, there are schedule of offenses, and people can apply bail Schedule 5, where you have to show interest of justice, and the difficult one is the exceptional circumstances, where in a case of a serious murder, premeditated murder. So they want to include some of the gender-based violence, where if you appear before the magistrate or second offender, third offender, it is not going to be easy for you to get bail. So those legislation, they are fast-tracking them. So soon, once they are bill now, once they are put in the table of president and the president signed them, it will be an act of parliament. And at the end of the day now, they will be implemented by the court. So it's so serious that the government is seeing this thing as agent.
Now, tell us again, how do people who need to get hold of you, or people who are victims of gender-based violence, or know of someone who's a victim of gender-based violence, how do they access your services or services in general to assist them?
Yes, like in court, they can go to court, but they can start at the police station, then go to police station, any nearest police station, they are dealing with gender-based violence. Legal Aid South Africa, they can come here for assistance. All people who want assistance from Legal Aid South Africa, they can phone. It's 0800-110-110. I repeat the numbers, 0800-110-110. When they call that, we have people who are working at our call center who are also qualified paralegal, and they have assistant of professional attorneys. They will take your call, they will screen, and then they will refer you to appropriate person who can refer your matter to your nearest and local magistrate, where you can come and they can refer to the relevant department. Those numbers, they are available, and they are between the from 8 o'clock up until in the evening, up until 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's a very important one. It's 0860-110-110. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. The 0800.
0800-110-110.
110-110.
Now, that was Stephen Mofokeng, and he's from Legal Aid's head office in Krugersdorp, and he was sharing the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence with us. Legal Aid has embarked on this plan because of the pandemic that has been sweeping this nation. We have now been dealing with COVID, and the steps that we took as a country to combat COVID were drastic. They were big. We recognized the threat immediately, and we took decisive action. Here we have a pandemic which has been brewing for a long time. Perhaps all of our lives it's been brewing. And perhaps now is the time more than ever that we need to take drastic action. As drastic perhaps as we had to take with COVID. It won't be the same type of solution. But the attitude towards the pandemic should be similar. The seriousness of the pandemic should be just as serious. Because COVID cost many lives, but femicide cost so many lives in a year. How many do we lose in 1 year? Our plans should be as serious as that. Recognize that we have so many deaths, so many lives who are affected by gender-based violence and by femicide. In this country, a woman is more likely to be killed by her most intimate partner than by anybody else. Anybody else. A woman who's the victim of murder, chances are, was killed by someone she was in a relationship with or is in a relationship with. And that's a frightening thought. How many of those victims do we have in a year? It runs into the thousands. The plan must be now. We must implement it now. We can't carry on like this. What are we raising? Now, thank you, Stephen, for sharing and providing your insights with our listeners. And we hope that you, the listener, have learned something from our conversation today, especially those of you who are seeking help and are unable to speak up. Or if you know of somebody who is seeking help and is unable to speak up. Many of you don't know that many of our legislation, particularly our harassment and domestic violence courts, will allow for you to make an application on behalf of somebody else who is unable to do so. So you can assist somebody in getting a domestic violence application. Don't be shy. Don't be nervous. Do it. You might save somebody's life. Thank you. And have a good night.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
That's it from us tonight. We hope you enjoyed the show and that you got informed by our guest, Stephen Mofokeng, and the information he shared with us today. Thank you once again, Stephen, for gracing us with your presence. to our producer, Rufile Mekwa, our technical producer, Utlwane Serame. Thank you for putting the show together for us. And from myself, Tapmab, it's always a pleasure being with you every Tuesday night. I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you for tuning in, and let's meet again next week, same time, same place. Good night.
Law Focus on BAFM 88.1, point of information. Law Focus Podcast.